Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Life's Erica Wright joins in.
Thanks for having me.
Nightmare nerd Daniel Ryan is out of deadites to kill.
Greetings, my fellow horror fanatics. This ought to be groovy.
Jonathan Mark of the Action Elite is looking for a new chainsaw.
Good to be here.
For those that don't know, Evil Dead was just a cult franchise for starting out. To infamous remarks, it soon became an instant beloved genre movie for its fast-paced, gruesome gags, practical effects, outlandish mixture of fantasy and horror, and occasional fight scenes. And to sprinkle all that, I'm just gonna circle around how we all got introduced into this never-ending saga. Our thoughts on each movie, you know, with a 5-star rating, and the recent TV show called Ash vs. Evil Dead. So for those that don't know, Ash Williams, he's a guy who's just always wrong place at the wrong time, and groovy, baby. Daniel, I think you remarked about it before. You caught it in cable TV in the early days and how it was kind of just a rather talked about movie.
It was really like around the, pretty much from like the 80s and 90s, Evil Dead was kind of a cult film. It was really in the 2000s it went mainstream.
That's a good way of putting it, because it's like now it starts getting played on, you know, the first one to this day is still often played on Showtime and used to be frequently promoted on you know, it's on Netflix now, even probably the goriest movie on the streaming service by far. And I would see it on IFC on occasion, and Army of Darkness frequently showed on Sci-Fi Channel because it was a Universal co-production. And then Evil Dead 2 just was talked about just because it launched again, you know, more special effects guys like Robert Kurtzman and company, and just seeing other people even try and ape the various chainsaw fights or just little other references. And of course, not critical hits, and then remarked about afterwards. And I remember a recent interview how, Bruce Campbell, who also got his career launched by this, you know, was like, we made a shitty movie, people loved it, so we made another shitty movie, people loved that too. And so on and so on and so on. Just seeing him have just kind of just no shame. And again, just even more, anytime you look at an article on Bloody Disgusting, Dread Central, or even a typical site reviewing fantasy or sci-fi or action movies, they'll even always say, this is kind of like Evil Dead, and that just instantly gives you a picture, is like what to expect. I've seen similar movies promoted that I haven't seen yet, like Hell Baby and Wormwood, Book of the Dead, or something. It's
like the original working title.
How was that, really? Okay, so there you go. Book of the Dead. Erica, did you frequent this on cable TV or the video stores, or was it just kind of in your household?
The original franchise, the first one I actually saw was Army of Darkness, and I think it was on USA.
That makes sense,
more frequent play.
Mm-hmm. I just like loved how silly it was. I didn't see the first Evil Dead or Evil Dead 2 until years later when I was in college, but I loved those even more. Really loved the intensity of them and the gore. I felt like Evil Dead 2 was sort of the best of both worlds. It was very funny, but it was also very gory. That's probably my favorite of the film series.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, once they announced that they were having the Ash vs. Evil Dead TV show, of course I had to watch that.
Right. And it was such BS when they're like, oh, we're canceling the show due to piracy. It's like, you weren't even promoting it all that much.
Yeah.
It's like they got into a contract, didn't want to honor it, so then they just wanted to kill the show, and it's like...
Find every excuse they could.
Reasons for the cancellation. It's like...
Yeah. That's how it always is. It's like, if someone just doesn't like the first frame or one of the trailers, it's like... It's amazing how they will just try any way they can to jeopardize a show's success. And it's like, it's just so inconvenient to everybody involved to just want to do that. And I mean, even those who aren't familiar with it, they're going to see the trailer for that and be like, this looks outrageous. Like, what the hell is this? I got to check it out, you know? And so Now, Daniel, you're pretty experienced knowing about some of the video games. I remember seeing at least two of them promoted in Game Informer. There was like one in like 05 that was like for PlayStation 2 and the PC. And then there was like two other ones.
Well, of course, there was the one all the way back in the 80s for the Commodore 64, which is is atrocious.
Is it? It's worse than E.T. the video game.
But, there was, for the original PlayStation, I believe it was Evil Dead Hail to the King, which was a fun game for its time, but it has not aged well at all. The controls in particular are god-awful.
Mm.
And the way the camera angle is constantly changing.
Is it kind of like Star Wars Jedi Power Battles, where you go to a certain area of the screen and it just randomly goes to, like... different angle, and you're like, wait, no, someone's attacking me.
Yeah, but there are points where you've got some deadite attacking you from basically off screen because the camera angle's wrong, and you don't know what the heck you're supposed to do because you don't see where it's coming from.
Sounds like a junky version of one of those House of the Dead arcade games.
Yeah, and then came Evil Dead Fistful of Boomstick, PlayStation 2, which
that's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, IMO, that's the best of them.
And Ted Raimi came in to play a different character.
That was the next one.
Oh, okay. So that's the one I'm thinking of. It's like he's playing a small person who is basically...
Evil Dead Fistful of Boomstick. To me, it has a brilliant story. It feels like a continuation from the films.
Where does it kind of line up? Is it kind of like set after part two or three? Or is it just kind of just...
It's basically... I would say post part two. If you didn't know about this, the original planned ending for Army of Darkness was going to be that Ash wakes up in a post-apocalyptic world where the Deadites took over.
Right.
That's kind of what they did with that particular game, was because that's the final stage. Ash has to go back in time. When he comes back to the present, it's a burnt-out apocalyptic world where the Deadites have taken over. And so I guess it picks up more directly after the second film.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, and then came Evil Dead Regeneration for PlayStation 2 as well, that it has not been ported to any other ones since, and none of them have, actually.
That's what's so weird. It's like, there was plenty of gamers, they were always renting, you know, various violent movies at the video store, so they always were pretty much in the know of, you know, it's like, oh, I've seen that, I've seen, you know, Warlock, RoboCop, I've seen all these various movies, and yet, like you say, it's like, it was very limited appeal. Just like they would only do it for like the computer games and Sony for whatever. I guess they had a stake in it. I don't know.
Then was Evil Dead Regeneration. And that's, again, it picks up after the second film. They totally disregard the other two games. And that's the one where Ted Raimi was Ash's sidekick, a dwarf Deadite.
Okay.
There you go. John, how did you come into knowledge of this in your household? Were your parents watching it, or were you just see it at the video store and just be like, yeah, I gotta check this out?
Well, my brother actually had the DVDs of both Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness.
Oh, okay.
I was able to watch both of them at the same time. And I didn't get to see the original until like many years later.
All good.
So that's how I got introduced.
Yeah, this was pretty weird. I had a bunch of pals. They would like certain over-the-top movies and then be picky about others, and it was wild how it transferred. I see this movie's influence definitely in, like, the first two Mummies, even other just movies that have horror elements but also have some darkly humorous stuff. We've talked about Wishmaster to Death on here, but I see its influence even in parts of, like, the first Jeepers Creepers with some of the dialogue in that. Establishing shots. I mean, it is one of those. It's like, I've seen some people listed as so bad it's good. I've seen people listed as classic. I've seen some people listed as cheesy but awesome. You know, it is one of those. I don't think anyone really considers it a bad movie any of these nowadays, but it is one of those. It's like, depending on the audience, depends on who you talk to. But I think most people will just instantly say, you know, it's like, it's not just a movie. You don't get it. It's an action horror comedy, fantasy. Or it's just a Bruce Campbell epic. So therefore, you know, it's kind of like the William Shatner thing. It's like, it's not just a regular movie anymore. it's not just any movie. It's got Arnold Schwarzenegger in it. Yeah.
I think it bears mentioning that the reason Evil Dead went mainstream in the 2000s, for one thing, was Sam Raimi directing the first three Spider-Man movies.
Even used the same cinematographer, Bill Pope, who he had used on Darkness and Darkmen. And Darkmen was definitely another one where you saw a lot of his just zany just moments where you're just like Tarantino. I don't know how to even classify this as a genre. It's just so loopy and awesome and outrageous.
And also in the 2000s, Bruce Campbell had a string of successes like Burn Notice. That helped raise Evil Dead's profile a lot.
Absolutely. I mean, He is definitely, he will always say yes to Raimi at this point because he just owes his career to him. So he would just appear in anything, whether it was one of those, you know, Xena Hercules shows or some other horror anthology. And you'd be like, wait a minute, I just saw Bruce cameo. I think, you know, we've already covered Trancers. I think this also bears some resemblance to even Phantasm. Just one of those is like, had everything working against it, no money, you know. A bunch of horror authors, you know, like Clive Barker and Stephen King recommending it, and, you know, other critics being like, what the hell is this shit?
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, tin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Hey, I heard you like movies.
I heard you like to hustle.
I heard you like podcasts.
Well, guess what?
There's a podcast for you out there called The Home Video Hustle.
Damn right.
Every Friday, we talk about whatever movie PJ picks out the bag. What does that mean? Every Wednesday on our YouTube page, I put a bunch of movies in a bag, and PJ picks one out at random. Mm-hmm. And then we just watch it. We talk about it for maybe like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. Whatever we feel like doing, wherever the conversation leads us.
But do we actually talk about the movie?
Most of the time.
Ah.
Tangents galore.
Yes.
So believe me, we may be a movie podcast, but it's not always about movies. We might talk about video games.
Mm-hmm.
Music. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the big one, music. Sometimes we might get a little bit of politicalness in there.
Yes.
Sometimes we may just, oh, we know what we like to do. We like to tell stories, PJ.
Ah, yes.
I am the master storyteller of the podcast realm. Undefeated. So if you like to hear about movies, video games, whatever foolishness comes to our mind, the most random stuff you can think of, check out the Home Video Hustle. You can find us on the Stitchers.
Yes.
The Google Play.
Yes.
Apple Podcasts.
What else?
Podbean.
What else?
Podcast Addict.
Goddamn.
All that. Ain't no reason you can't get your hustle on. We everywhere. Worldwide, baby.
Hustle, mother. Hustle.
Hey, we can't cuss in the promo, PJ.
Ah.
We gotta be family friendly. There may be podcasts out there that don't want his hair to say
ah.
All that good fun stuff.
Well, you.
don't run the listeners away, PJ.
Ah, I'm sorry.
But this is going kind of long.
Yes.
So we'll end this and say, hey, check out the Home Video Hustle every Friday on all the various podcast outlets. Peace.
Peace.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. And while Witch didn't make it to the top of the world, he did make the Gangs of Hollywood podcast. So join the gang and enjoy a movie review podcast about movie gangs, gangsters, mobsters, and the mayhem they cause. You can find GOH Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. At GOHpod, at www.gohpod.com, as well as your favorite podcast listening app. And remember, say hello to your little friend for me.
If you take two old punk rockers who are past their prime, put them in front of a movie screen and give them a podcast, what do you get? Cinema Punks. Cinepunks. It's the mixtape of movies.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in it.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of
it. Unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this like little nerd glee with everything that kept popping up.
Little history doll popping up at you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie. How did you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach, and we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh yeah.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-liner plot holes and gratuitous movies, it's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy
at EILFM.podbean.com.
Welcome to Who Was She podcast. I am your host, Tara Jabari. After a decade working in documentaries, marketing, and all things digital media, I found that podcasting is a strong medium to share stories. After years of producing for others, I decided to start my own biographical podcast. Who Was She will focus on the life of a woman throughout Baha'i history. The first season is about Lydia Zemanoff. Lydia's story explores the subjects of the power of language and faith. Her father invented the universal language Esperanto, and she came from a Jewish family and became a Baha'i. She grew up during World War I and was killed during World War II in a concentration camp, despite heroic efforts to save her life. How can one person's life intersect with so many others, connect across borders, and inspire a biography, which inspired this podcast? Over the next few weeks, I will share her story with you and the lives that were most affected by her and those who affected her life as well. They include her father, Ludwig Zemanoff, her spiritual mother, American journalist Martha Root, and the Baha'i German soldier Fritz Mako, who worked for the resistance undercover while having to serve the Nazi party. I want to thank the author Wendy Heller and George Ronald Publishing for their blessing to let me use Heller's biography, Lydia, The Life of Lydia Zemanoff, Daughter of Esperanto, as a main and instrumental resource for this podcast. So please subscribe and learn about this amazing woman who traveled through three continents in an effort to bring unity through the power of language. You can also find more information on our Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast. Music was composed and performed by Sam Red. I am your host, Tara Jabari. Join us next time as we begin our journey about Lydia Zemanoff.
Hi, everybody. It's Mac Jackson. I wanted to invite you to a new site called the Forever Adventure Network. This website has everything. Pictures, videos, blogs. There's original music by Harmony Constant. Two podcasts. One is the MacGyver Podcast, where we celebrate Richard Dean Anderson, his iconic roles, and how it's influenced our lives. There's episode discussions, interviews, and life conversations. The second podcast is the Never Gets Old Podcast, where we celebrate all the best things that we love in life, from TV, movies, music, and comics. The site is also the home for the MacGyver SG-1 audio series, an ongoing adventure series that continues the adventures of MacGyver and SG-1. There are also multiple stores to choose from for all of your pop culture and adventure needs. Come on by and check us out today. And thanks for joining the adventure.
Are you sick of the same old stale podcasts? Well, then join Vanessa and Darren as they dissect movies of all kinds. The two lifelong cinema lovers bring their favorites, curiosities, and first-time watches to the operating table and inject them with a healthy dose of snark. Then there's the waiting room, where they examine books and short stories. So just look for them on Apple Podcasts and where fine podcasts are available. They're part of the Legion Podcast Network. Follow them on Twitter at VD Clinic Pod. Join them on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/VDClinicPod, or email them at VDClinicPod@gmail.com. They're ready to cure what ails you. And still, they just might be a little contagious.
We now continue with our program.
And it is also just one of those, I have friends who are very nitpicky. Some of them can't even get into the, you know, so bad they're good movies. And they excuse this because they just love, just the over-the-top insanity of it. They love the art direction, effects, and, again, the humor where you're just like, oh, my God, you know. And you do see a bit of this in just other cartoon shows, like even Rick and Morty and, you know, anything else on Adult Swim. It's just, it is one of those. You can call it X-rated violence, but I mean, there's plenty of kids who have seen this and, you know, they've turned out all right. I think if you can handle Robocop, you can handle this, but it is one of those. I would not show this to my mother, for instance, but I could definitely show it to, say, you know, my aunt and uncle know about it, of course, and they think it's hysterical, you know, so I mean, for the right reasons. But so let's just cover Evil Dead 1, you know, just it follows, just when you think it's going into typical slasher mode, it think anything but, you know, it's a haunted house. And it's a tree attack. And I saw these all in college again, and I refreshed again this year to see how they've aged. And it was one of those, is like, at the time I understood the hype, but I wasn't as taken aback by all of them back then. But I kept coming back to parts of them and realizing the appeal. It was one of those slow burn kind of things. And it was one of those, this is the kind of movie, I think it just kind of, it's very hard to critique because it's just all kinds of things. It's just very experimental, very restricted, yet, you know, gallons of blood and very creative. I don't want to call it a student film because I feel like that's very disrespectful, but it does kind of, it's kind of at that kind of mindset, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's kind of just starting out, you know, but it's more than just like a professor's exam. It's now also just saying, let's just try something out and see what people think of it. I think it's kind of a sizzle reel kind of equivalent. It's a startup kit.
Yeah, the whole story, the production of that movie is an epic in and of itself.
Yeah, Coppola thought he had it bad on Apocalypse Now. Boy, howdy, he has no idea. People breaking their legs, random lighting grips just quitting there and then, just for no reason at all, to where Raimi is just keeping it together and just telling Bruce, hey, you know, we're going to staple your foot, and now you got to go back in and you got to run, you know.
Yeah, has everyone here read If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor?
Yeah.
I've not.
I'm not parts of it. It's just funny. Not.
But yeah, his stories about, like, the sheer hell he was put through in that movie, and Sam Raimi really just likes to torture him, apparently. Like, he sprained his ankle, so, like, Sam and, like, some, was it, I think, Rob Tapper, they were just poking Bruce's ankle with sticks or something.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, Bruce, you know, Sam's not a sociopath or even as messed up as Tarantino, but he is one of those, he's like, he likes to get, he knew Bruce well enough to where he could pick on him that way to get his painful reactions that you see in the movie. And the reason I separate him from, say, the Kubricks or Hitchcocks of the world is because, you know, he is a people person. And I mean, for God's sakes, you know, Raimi's married and he's always a delight at conventions, but he was one of those, he had a dark sense of humor. And fortunately, everyone in his wheelhouse, everyone spoke the same language, was a fan of Universal and Hammer Horror type movies.
Right.
And just very violent escapades. And the fact that they were even just willing to be that imaginative, you know, I'm sure they got laughed off. You want what and what? An undead dude with a chainsaw for a hand and, you know, who, you know, is haunted by demons in a house that he can't see. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly it. So, I mean, it is definitely one of those, like it or hate it, it will kill each time you take it to an anniversary screening at some draft house or drive-in. It is one of those, people talk about it. I guess you could definitely call these a college movie. More or less, I mean, you don't have to love it to admire it. It's also that kind of movie. It's just like, yeah, I mean, this is what you do when you have nothing but creativity and virtually no one giving you notes, but you still have enough stamina to finish a movie and make it with love.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
At the very start, when we were talking about the TV show, you mentioned how like the network seemed loath to promote it and how they seemed to be going out of their way to kill it. Like,
oh, absolute bullshit.
Yeah, in his memoir, something Bruce Campbell actually describes is how, for whatever pains they went through making Evil Dead, they had...
Oh, yeah, the network TV edit.
What he went into detail about was they had full control, beginning to end. It was all them. And for their next project, when they did the movie Crime Wave, which barely anyone has ever seen, they were just astonished at all the studio interference. Mm-hmm. And it became like a thing for Sam Raimi ever since. He always demands an insane amount of control over his projects. And I suspect that's part of what went wrong with the TV show, is that Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell wanted more control than the network was willing to cede.
Well, and it is weird, too, because, mm-hmm. I mean, it's now by the infamous CEO who was the one who kind of made HBO become a, you know, TV network, as in addition to doing all the various movies and sports. And he moved over there after many lawsuits and everything, and it's like, he's still using the same game plan for Starz, which is owned by Anchor Bay, which, of course, owns the right to the first two Evil Deads. And, yeah, I think Campbell even said there was, like, some copyright disputes from Universal regarding some of the references they made to Army of Darkness, and they cleared it up. I'm like, that shouldn't matter. Universal was just a distributor. They weren't the owner. It's just stupid. And like you say, it's just, oh, we blame it on piracy. It's like, no, bullshit. I saw plenty of people buying those at, you know, Best Buy type stores and watching all the special features, even the just various promos and making of little bumpers that they would play on, you know, YouTube and in between programming. So it's just like, it was heavily promoted. I think they just, like you say, they didn't want to relinquish any kind of control. This again goes back to the recent John Leguizamo interview on Conan's podcast, where they both say that their key to success was making their supervising producer believe that they had come up with their idea when it was really the other way around. But that's the only way you get the guys to fuck off. So, you know, it really is. You got to basically make them think, oh, yeah, that's brilliant. Do that. Even though you suggested it. My idea. Mine. Has anyone ever introduced this to any other members of your family, like just or friends, or just have any other fun times watching it? Any of these, like?
I've watched the whole film series and the TV series with my best friend, and I got my mom to watch season one of the TV series, which was an accomplishment. She kind of got hooked on it because the episodes are very short and they have those cliffhanger endings. So we binged that first season together, and she didn't totally hate it. She liked part of it, but she's like, well, maybe it kind of wasted my time. Like, she's not really a big horror fan.
Oh, dear.
But I'm amazed she made it through the whole season. So
I'm the same way. I have family who can, they can survive something like Dead Like Me or, you know, X-Files or Twilight Zone, but, you know, certain horror stuff, you know, unless it's something like maybe the first Terminator or something that they don't even realize is actually horror, you know, like maybe The Mummy. It's just like, and the same thing with action. It's like, oh, I don't really consider that action. I'm like, well, underneath all the mystery and drama, there were a bunch of shootouts. So mm-hmm. Same thing with Indiana Jones and all that other stuff. It's like, yeah, it's an adventure, but I mean, same thing with sci-fi. It's like defining what is or isn't sci-fi is like, well, it's got psychological elements and all that, but they do have a scientist for the main character, so that's why they put the sci-fi sticker on it. Let's move on to movie two. This is confusing to some, but long story short, they basically remade the first parts of the first movie while briefly establishing that it's kind of a sequel at the beginning, but it's basically a retread, mm-hmm. and I definitely would argue that this is a more successful version of it. And again, it's just nonstop gags, rather unusual and first person, just establishing, you know, tracking shots. I seriously don't even know how they did the beginning where Ash is tossed out of the cabin by the vengeful spirits. I mean, that's it does same. Not cut.
I do on that. That.
Oh, you did? No.
He was. Yeah. He was mounted on this this crane, and basically a spinning cross on this crane type vehicle, and they spun him while driving him through the forest. So
that's actually him in pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's like in what
his
Raimi
description
did.
Is that he was Sam Raimi's personal video game for a day.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, so that's what Raimi did to Liam Neeson in Darkman for the roller coaster scene. You know the one. So him saying, fuck you, stop this, you know, is actually real. So there you go. So he's on a roller coaster. Ah, God. That someone would get sued today if they did that.
Exactly.
Unless it was like a very private, you know. And there are people who still try and do some stuff, but those days are few and far in between. Nowadays, if you want to get rid of something, you know, people are still more likely to talk and get you, you know, blacklisted from a certain state.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to give anyone hate mail. It's one of those, they fortunately trusted each other and they knew how to do it, obviously, with the stunts and all that. But it is one of those, it's like, you do it now, it's going to be like a PR nightmare. You did what? You did what? There's mm-hmm. too many press and media visiting a movie set, so something often gets slipped and, you know, becomes clickbait. But mm-hmm. that is wild. That totally makes sense why, you know, he's I thought it was just some kind of rack focus kind of thing where, you know, the camera's mounted in place but the lens itself kind of leans out, you know, and that's what causes that illusion. But no, that totally makes better sense. The camera strapped to the vehicle that's moving. Man, that it's just, I know he doesn't actually hit a tree, but boy, how does that look painful. So
his willingness to do his own stunts was probably his greatest asset for a big part of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely so. And it kind of continues on into other parts of his career. It's funny how you see all his various other just TV guest spots on stuff like Ellen and Homicide: Life on the Street and all these other things, where it's like you see a lot of the same vulnerableness that he displays, especially here in movie number two. And I'm sure movie number two was enough for his demo reel back in the day to get him more roles. They're like, whoa, hey, who is this dude? All bloodied up. He does a good job of differentiating both, you know, evil Ash clone and his main Ash, and something that continues into the next movie. And I think it's also helped by them making use of just, again, just parts of this abandoned set and just, you know, structuring it differently. You don't really even need any establishing shots because that just allows for more surprises around the corner, so to speak. Literally. I wouldn't be surprised if they use three different houses in an attic, but I mean, it's definitely an accomplishment, cinematically, effects wise, and a lot of the gags I still feel hit their mark. That mm-hmm. again, and not for the squeamish, but anyone who's got a dark sense of humor, it's gonna totally be up most of our alleyways. I think it's gonna just be like, whoa, and it's not. It's morbid, but it's also not to the point where you're just like, oh, God, I feel like I actually saw someone get killed. But it's also just one of those, like, it just embraces the fantasy and the lunacy of it all. I think that's why it has stood the test of time.
Right.
And it's definitely one of those also that I think it shows where this definitely Raimi definitely uses this as his main template. I feel like Evil Dead was basically him testing the waters, and by part two he is basically just like out and about. He's like, this is where I go back to reference how I did this, how I did that in order to accomplish this for the next, you know, dozen movies he does. And it's kind of a shame. People often think of him as just either the fantasy guy, the comedy guy, or the horror guy. He's all of those things. He is a very diverse dude, and he's gotten so many people various gigs by, you know, just taking a producer credit and telling the studio, hey, hire this guy. You want to hire me, but I'm telling you, hire this guy, you know, because he's just like me.
Royalty.
His brother, I think, is pretty accomplished as well. And it's a shame that they worked on a few different things to where they ended up kind of being credited as Alan Smithy, because they were unamused with what, again, just continual studio battles, doing just very fanatic and wacky movies. And I can see why he got along well with some of the Coen brothers, but I feel like Raimi is his own man. In fact, in many ways, Tarantino basically owes his career to him. Really does. I mean,
yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got to say on this. What's everyone's favorite violent moment? I'll start with you.
For me, it's got to be when his dead girlfriend's head falls into his lap and he bangs it around and then runs into the work shed to put it in the vise. Because of just that infamous moment where in editing, they decided it was important for the audience to know where his character is. So you hear the word work shed, even though his mouth blatantly doesn't move.
That is funny. Yes.
Oh, I did remember that. Yeah, briefly on last viewing for this. Yeah, I do recall that. And I thought I had blinked, and it's like, yeah, whatever. It's a low budget movie, so of course it's going to be that blooper. That's kind of part of the fun and appeal. I got to hand it to just still the immortal scene where his own hand is around. Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds you of infamous movies from the 40s, like The Crawling Hand. It's going around flipping him off and just pissing him off even more, to where he's like, what the fuck did you do to me?
That's my favorite as well.
it just, only Raimi could have come up with something like that.
My favorite part's when he's trying to shoot at his own hand.
Oh yeah.
In the wall, and then all this blood comes out.
And before that, isn't he like out of ammo and stuff? And he's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I've been loading this fucker for what feels like ages.
And then his like laugh attack right after that happens is another great part that I love.
Oh, I love that part too.
Yeah, yeah. The other characters feel just as real and vital. And I'll leave that for the TV show discussion where we find out what actually happened to them. And of course, ends on a cliffhanger, but even if if movie number three had never come to pass, it was still a wacky way to end it. It just kind of added to the dream quality of it, like H.P. Lovecraftian, I guess, for lack of a better description. It just kind of gave you that. Yep, he's in a different kind of hell. There's no escape in hell. Or purgatory, whatever this is. It's good, long ass while, but finally, part three, Army of Darkness comes around, also known as Ash versus Jason and the Argonauts.
That's what I say all the time.
That's what it is. I call this Lord of the Rings. And I kid you not, I was one time at some kind of castle, I forget which area of Texas. Long story short, I had some cousins that were getting married about a good, now going on 5 years ago. And I kid you not, they had a lot of undead kind of scriptures and other stuff there. Some of it was legit, but most of it was just people dressing up for a fun kind of, it was kind of like a, not medieval times, but a Renaissance fair. And at one point, both my aunts are making Walking Dead references. And I'm like, nah, get the fuck out of here. It's not Walking Dead. This is Army of Darkness. And they both just guffawed. Because it's just a very unusually detailed, bizarre looking castle that just looks like a bunch of people could be fighting who knows what. It was that kind of random movie
Well, actually, ironic thing to bring up, because again, from Bruce Campbell's memoir, keeping all the extras for that final big battle scene corralled was always a challenge. And apparently, on one particular night, they found a pair of the skeletal extras boning each other in the castle set.
Oh, that can so not happen nowadays. Jesus.
He actually impressed they were able to pull that off, because he couldn't even get the hang of trying to pee as Evil Ash. trying to unzip his fly with his 3-inch long monster fingernails.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, man.
Where did they film it again? Did they film it in the same place as movie 2, the ending of that? Or
like just Southern California desert.
Oh, okay. A lot of people claim that the sets in this look cheap. I don't think they look cheap at all, but I mean, it's a wacky movie, and so why would you care if it looked cheap? I mean, I don't get that complaint, but whatever. It's just me.
It never looked cheap to me. I don't get that.
I definitely like how Ash fights Evil Ash here. It's just very wacky how his face is stretching out, and I don't know how they do it, but it's the right. There's very limited computer kind of morphing stuff, and I think that's why I like this. It doesn't feel like a sellout, even though it's got a big budget. Mm-hmm. Still practical. I there's a lot of other skeletons that don't mash up well with today's standards, and when you watch them in Blu-ray, you know, you get an even more undesired visual look and effect. But I have no problem with how these skeletons look, and the recent Shout Factory Blu-ray recently added to the previous Boomstick edition, where it contains not only all free cuts of the movie, but you know, the director's cut, theatrical cut, and the international cut, but also the TV cut, which was used for USA and Sci-Fi, and it's basically much of the same as the international cut, just brief, you know, edits here and there. They were basically all deleted scenes, added stuff of the witch and everything. I will say this, I'm fine with it having an R rating, but nowadays, I don't really find it all that R-rated. There's like
There's really not that much gore in it.
Yeah, other than the chainsaw fight at the end, which kind of gives it a Running Man kind of feel, in my opinion. But I love how, I mean, it's violent and awesome. I'm fine with it being R's. You can't accuse it of being PG-13, but it's kind of funny. There's like only one mumbled F-bomb.
That's true.
I think today it probably could get a PG-13.
I guess. There's apparently, in one of the cuts, there's some naked people running around, but whatever. I mean, it's just cheesy fun, guys. I mean,
right. Yeah.
I mean, good, bad, I'm the guy with the gun.
Mm-hmm.
I love how they don't call the king King Arthur, they just call him Lord Arthur. And they don't even really make fun of that nowadays. Basically, Ash is his, you know, Robin Hood, his Knight of the Round Table. I like how the music doesn't try to parody all the other sword and sandal type stuff like Excalibur or have that. It's just, it's pretty much the same as movie 2. And I feel like the gags have dated as well. Obviously, they're not as gruesome as movie 2, but I pretty much just the quotes make this movie for me.
Yeah.
Yep. Same with me.
So yours, you know, years after multiple video games and Bruce Campbell always hinting or making a cameo, they didn't do an Evil Dead remake 2013. To add to the confusion, Bruce briefly has a cameo as the Ash character. Fortunately, the filmmaker later went on to make Don't Breathe, another hit horror film. What was their take on this remake?
I really loved it. I didn't go in with high expectations, but I feel like it's a good standalone movie. It is a lot more grim than any of the original entries in the series.
I remember some people said it was actually legit scary on like the first one, which is just
it didn't really have humor, very little humor in it. maybe the only bit of humor that I noticed is when one character slips on another character's piece of skin that was cut off, like slips on peel. That was the only slight nod to that sort of slapsticky quality of the original franchise. But yeah, I thought it was actually really creepy, and I think at that time it had like a record amount of blood that was used on set, fake blood.
Definitely a rarity where people just wanted to give it a chance because it was just a cult thing versus, you know, oh, is, you know, Campbell coming back? You know, what is it? It's like, no, it doesn't matter. It's just a different take on it. I kind of rank it up there with the Child's Play remake, where I neither like or hate it, but I think it's an interesting effort that might improve on repeat viewings. It's definitely better than the forgettable Poltergeist remake.
As far as most recent horror remakes, I would say this is one of the better ones, but probably just nostalgia, but it just doesn't hold up to the original. And a big part of that is the lack of humor. This is just straight up gore and slasher. The original, the thing is, Sam Raimi, by his own admission, he's a Three Stooges nut, and he just can't resist throwing a little zaniness into just about anything he does.
So you would have preferred just more, you know, people hitting each other upside the head and just more haunted spirits and all that.
Something more in line with some of the more lighthearted parts of the original.
Gotcha. As rare as those moments are. I know what you mean.
But yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was not excited for that when they announced it. I wasn't too sure until I saw the trailer. And then when I finally got to watch it later on, when I got to rent it, I was pleasantly surprised. I do think it's one of the better remakes, but I still don't think it tops, you know, the rest of the movies, but I thought it was a solid effort, at least.
Gotcha, yeah. I mean, I definitely didn't feel like it was... I can't call this a cash grab in any way. I mean, you can tell once that a rush versus, you know, development hell just reads all over every inch of the movie, or, you know, producer... over, you know, again, I think the producers told the director what to do, but he still had enough leeway to determine where the gore explodes and what shot and all that. So then we come to Ash versus Evil Dead. This is a fucking hoot. Man, long story short, to make it kind of funny, what I noticed when I reflected on it afterwards, and both John and I had to catch up on this because we pleasantly found out that it was on Netflix. Season one is basically a tribute to movie one, if you think about it, because it's just one fight scene to the next, one outrageous gore after another, you know, hits keep on coming. There's even where it gets blurry is definitely episode 6 through 8, where they're in the woods messing around with the hunters and some other random townspeople. It really isn't much to the script, but that's okay. It just flows into one after the other. You're like, whoa, 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 what does that mean? Season two is basically, it actually addresses what the hell happened at the end of Evil Dead 2. It's like, yeah, Ash literally got driven crazy by the spirits and killed everybody. And I actually like how they insert some of the stock footage of, you know, his girlfriend and all that. It's like, whoa, whoa, that's neat. You know, it's just that was so seamless and matched up perfectly with all the other stuff they were shooting. And get to see Ash trying to determine, you know, am I an animal? And there were some other cool character actors added to the cast, like Michelle Hurd from Law and Order SVU. And she's been in a bunch of other B horror movies as well, like I Spit on Your Grave Free and Wrong Turn 6, that I'm very surprised. She seems to be just the detective who always shows up and shoots people, and I like how at the end he's like, hey, give me some sugar. Like, wow, okay, Ash, perv. And season 3, gotta be my favorite. It basically has a lot of nonstop chainsaw fights like Army of Darkness, but then it gets even just more outrageous how the first part is him realizing all this other stuff, going into a different part of hell, trying to undo the past for these time loops, and talk more about his dad, who's played by TV veteran Lee Majors.
$6 million inspired choice.
$6 million man is the father of the one-armed chainsaw. Oh, God. So then it gets even more wacky because kind of like the random skeleton army, you got this a bunch of all these other giants and other random seemingly unstoppable forces in like the final two episodes. And I'm like, that's great.
Just like the aforementioned video game, they fulfilled their original intent. Ash wakes up in a post-apocalyptic world.
Land of confusion. Yeah. Oh, God. It's great. A lot of people were complaining they didn't like all that. How do we feel about him having a daughter and all that and him being like, I like it how he's actually trying to supervise his daughter and all this other stuff and her boyfriends. And he's like, I was her dad for 2 days ago.
That's the line I love too.
That was just great. I mean, and I saw some people saying they thought some of the new characters were whiny. I thought they were just hysterical, especially what's his name who keeps getting killed and they keep resurrecting not Pedro, it's
Pablo.
And as childish as the commercial at the front where he's like in part of a utility store was, I think I about got busted for about almost an hour. I was just like, nuts, lots of nuts and bolts.
Reminded me of almost Better Call Saul right there.
Yes, that is a good, because it does kind of have a similar kind of like Breaking Bad, just shit is hitting the fan literally every episode. It's like, how can it get any worse? There's no way they're wrapping this up, but it avoids predictability by, I mean, there's plenty of times where Ash is even talking to the screen or reflecting on himself. And I like how, what we think about in season two, where the other kind of manipulator who's causing everybody to go against themselves, the evil mad scientist, is just making him doubt himself and making him trying to brainwash him into killing his friends. You know, the part where he's chained up in the prison.
they knew what they were doing with the little felt ash puppet.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, yeah, that part was cool, too. But, I mean, even in the other part where you're thinking, oh, shit, is Ash really this stupid now that he's thinking he's a monster? He's accepted himself as a monster. He's not really going to kill all his friends, is he?
it ties into one of their original plans for Evil Dead 2. Like, real early in the script writing, they had meant for it to be told in almost internal monologue where Ash is continually asking, you know, am I cracking up? Did this really happen? Did I chop up my girlfriend? And so they were kind of rolling with that.
So they tossed those out and just went with the comedy. Now they said, well, these were originally meant to be, so let's literally just reenact those. Just the stuff that never was, but now we can, now that we got the time and money. So now that's cool to know, because yeah, that explains why they're just so comfortable being in here again. He's trying to outdo all his other one-liners without feeling like he's forced or against a very crappy green screen or any of that. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like this was a hack job. It really does feel like just they're giving you all the fan service. And because of that, you know, it's also funny seeing Raimi's spouse, Lucy Lawless, being here. She gets taken over by who knows how many, you know, witchcraft spells and all that. And
she's a good friend of Bruce Campbell at this point.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And it basically keeps taking you for a ride. I love the recurring gag how hell is literally in the backseat of your car. No, literally.
Mm-hmm.
Portal to hell to get rid of the Book of the Dead. We got to toss it into the car. And I love how just randomly after that's done, it's like it all implodes and the portal disappears. It's like, what the hell? Okay, perfect.
I really enjoy the whole the plot thread of Ash meeting his father, you know, after being estranged for years.
Right, and then he kills him anyway, and he's like, oh shit, he made me kill you. And he's like, go get him, son. I understand. I'm okay with you drowning me.
I think that they reveal what the J in his middle name stands for.
Yeah.
So they're like, Ashley Joanne Williams.
Yeah. It's like, I always thought it was just Ash. And it's like, no, and like, Ashley. Oh, God. Too many good moments. Since then, Campbell has said he's thinking of doing a fourth movie. I thought that was it for him, but, you know, if they can do it.
Somehow I knew that wasn't the end.
All right.
Yeah.
Whether it was another video game, whether it was a comic book series, that character...
How many comics have they done of this?
How many video games has he done?
No. Comics.
Evil Dead comics? Oh, God, I could not count. There's never been one ongoing one. It's always been like mini-series.
It's pretty wild. Has anyone seen kind of the influence of Evil Dead when, you know, when they read certain bizarre, you know, Japanese anime or manga? It seems like those guys saw it and then they took it too seriously. It's just like, man, so this is nightmare fuel is what you're saying. Yeah, there's actual trees raping people. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Let's not go down the tentacle route.
Ooh. Yeah. Chithalu, yeah. Oh, God. So I'm going to let us all just rank each movie. So Evil Dead, where does this rank on a 5-star scale? And just brief summary, overview. I'll let you go first, Daniel.
I would give it a solid 3. Because... you know, it's a lot of fun as an 80s slasher, and if you just like that kind of entertainment, you know, it's an entertaining movie, but you can tell this was a very inexperienced filmmaker's first attempt. There's a lot that's crude. You can see so many errors they made, so much that doesn't fit.
Oh, good. Erica?
I'm actually going to give it 5 out of 5. I think, you know, considering the very low budget they had to work with, they did a phenomenal job with what they have. And there were also so many innovative things done with camera work. Also love the intensity of it and the gore level. So part of this could be my nostalgia talking, but yeah, I'm going 5 out of 5.
No, okay. Well, this is all nostalgia. This is what has kept us alive on this franchise. And Johnny Boy, Johnny Cage. I'm sorry. Good resistance. Hey.
For me, that one's actually my least favorite of the bunch. So I go 2.5.
Ooh, snap.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not one I usually go back to out of all of them. I don't really have much to say about that one too much.
Oh, good. It's a 3 out of 5 for me. It's technically well done, and I do like myself some gore. It's not really my kind of gore, but like Erica said, you know, it's just very well framed and staged, and it's definitely a must see for every indie filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those, you can't take it seriously because, you know, they weren't taking it seriously. But yet I see so many people who would say, this is the scariest movie I've ever seen. I'm like, well, maybe if you're 5, because everything's scary at that age. But I mean, it's just a wacky movie. There's a lot of, like Daniel said, there's a lot of funny stuff, and then there's some, you know, not meant to be funny, but still amusing stuff. And then the hardworking effort is what really is just kind of what drives it. It, you know, is why you should see it. It's occasionally rather deep at multiple points in outlining parts of the house. Basically, the house kind of steals the show because, I mean, much like Night of the Living Dead, this is where you can realize, hey, you can do a movie, especially a horror movie, in just one location with no props or, you know,
minimalist
other names and stunt people. And like Erica said, you know, nostalgia has allowed other people to revisit this on occasion, make memes out of it, even just there was one meme that was shared recently that showed like the address for this house, and everybody was just guffawing. They're like, I see what you did there. This is the address of the abandoned house in Evil Dead 1.
It's left of it.
Right. Yeah, before it implodes. So moving on to movie 2. I feel like this is basically the director's cut of movie 1. You know, this is just firing even more on all cylinders, and you don't have to see movie 1 to understand movie 2, and just were just jaw-dropping effects, literally jaw-dropping. It's just like, man, how did they do that? And the Foley on this is very, very well done. It adds to the intensity of it all, and just the other times. There's never a dull moment. All the other characters who are hitchhiking and coming upon this kind of give you an idea of the world that they're creating, so that just makes it deeper than it was, even though it really only had like a few million more than the last movie, you know. Erica, what's your take on this one?
I'm also gonna give this 5 out of 5.
Woo!
it's definitely more polished than the first film, but they've really, the whole sense of humor has developed, and I think that's where we really see the Ash character evolve, that closer to what we know and love, in Army of Darkness and the Ash versus the Evil Dead series, where in the first movie he was just kind of this scared guy for most of the film.
Yeah, just staring at the camera intently, what's wrong?
Right, at least in Evil Dead 2 you start seeing that sarcastic badass action hero kind of character
looking at himself in the mirror and trying to saw off his hand. And then the female lead is good. She plays off him really good, and again, all the other hitchhikers are good. They have some amusing dialogue, so it's not just Ash who gets the best moments. They're like, what kind of fucked up place is this? It's a 4 out of 5 for me. Daniel.
I'm going to give this one 5 out of 5. Just, this is the penultimate Evil Dead film. They got the formula right, better than they have before or since.
For sure. It's definitely the template. It is like, I've even seen people who, again, never got this franchise, and yet they would just guffaw nonstop about this. So it just shows you, even the people who, don't watch goofy movies or other bizarre stuff and don't typically, give a high rating about something they don't like, they still will just guffaw about this endlessly, even if they don't understand it. It's that kind of rare movie. It's like, come on, it's funny. Come on. Mr. Mark.
5 out of 5.
Woo!
This is my favorite one.
It was a good year for genre enthusiasts.
Mm-hmm. Not only from the humor, Bruce Campbell's performance, the effects, all still hold up to this day. Nothing tops it from this franchise, period.
All good. Now, Army of Darkness. Does the humor hold up, or is it outdated by 90s tropes? Erica.
Well, I don't have an issue with it being, 90s tropes. I just feel like I like this entry a bit less because sometimes the humor feels a little juvenile. And also, honestly, there's not enough gore. If it had had the gore level of Evil Dead 2, I would probably rank it higher. But
fair enough.
Probably going to go with 3.5 out of 5 for that one.
Oh, good. Daniel, where does it rank?
I'm going to have to give this one like a 3, just because, they went overboard in the humor here. They went too far, and so much of it was, again, really zany and childish kind of humor. Some of that was fine. They went way too far with this one. And I don't know what it was going on with Bruce Campbell, but Ash was a bit too much of a jerk in this one.
I think it didn't help that it was like they kept pasting his face over the stuntman's body.
That didn't help either.
it doesn't really stand out like a sore thumb, but you can spot it if you really want to. John, where does this rank? It might not be better than Evil Dead 2, but is it?
I give it 4 out of 5, actually.
All right.
Still enjoy the humor. In this, for the most part, there's some of it that doesn't exactly hold up, but mostly because the last scene, that's what helps this movie a lot for me.
Yeah, the final raid on the castle and the evil Ash fight, but
Wacky comes back in the future, and you know.
Oh yeah, and he...
that's my favorite.
Fonda makes a cameo. Ash, why are you shooting a guy in the store? I'm in the minority, but I totally feel you guys. You do have to be in the mood to watch this on certain days. Some of the humor doesn't land, but comparing this to some of the other ones like Gremlins 2 and even Leprechaun, I think it just the one-liners just do it for me, and just Bruce is so dedicated to playing the role, and there's just, like you say, I pretty much put this on the pedestal as Last Action Hero, where it should totally be R, but I still can get over the ratings and studio interference to still find just a pretty cool and just more outrageousness. I like what they do with the book, and like you say, it could have been more violent, but I still like some of the fights and humor, so 5 out of 5. I could quote this all day. Seriously, it's just that outrageous a movie. And don't get me wrong, these might not be best of the year type movies, but these are still, it's like, these are good genre movies. You gotta watch them, you gotta check them out. And I love the effects, and I like it better than Last Action Hero from that comparison, especially just even the poster alone, how that's making fun of Spartacus type epics, you know, just, with the Dracula type looking mansion. And there's probably, I might even have to check out the other cuts of this and just see if they play better than the theatrical one we mainly know. I don't know, it just is dated way better than, say, other just medieval kind of comedy stuff like Robin Hood Men in Tights, for me personally. But
I would agree.
Don't get me wrong, that's funny too, but it is also one of those, I saw it way too much to where it just kind of, you know how there, it's kind of like Back to the Future for me, where I'm like, I've seen it way too much. It really doesn't have any effect on me anymore, so I really don't even have to watch it anymore, if that makes sense. It was like, some movies are like SNL skits. You only got to watch them twice, and that's it. While other ones you can watch, you know, multiple times a year. all righty, so Ash versus Evil Dead. let's give a rating of that whole series, Erica.
The entire series, I'll probably do 4.5 out of 5.
Woo! Yeah.
Really got a kick out of it. It's funny as hell. It kind of reminded me of things I loved about the original series.
For sure. Daniel?
I'm going to call it a 5. This one, they took what they did with the second one and went further with it. They finally had the time, the budget, the resources, and the experience to go all the way.
Totally. John?
I'm going with a 4 on this. Well, because, like I said, I mean, I enjoyed most of it. Season 3 is my least favorite, but that's just me right there.
Yeah, I'm in that boat with you, too.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
But so basically both season 1 and 3 kind of have their slower moments or filler episodes. Season 2 is definitely the best one, just because it addresses all the cliffhangers of Evil Dead 2, and unlike a Star Wars, by revealing the resolution to the mystery, it doesn't take you out of it saying, whoa, who needed a resolution to that? It does actually make you just come into it and say, whoa, wow, okay. So Now again, we get to see Ash going evil again and struggle with that and figure out who, you know, all the various residents in this town died. Again, I just love how he's finding all the most unusual allies and learning how to use the chainsaw again. And just there, that toilet scene. Oh boy. is that season 1 or 2? I can't remember. There's definitely 2, 1. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 2. That's right. That's right. Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's when he's having the birthday party. Worst birthday ever. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I love how everyone's like, what? What are you doing? season 3 takes a while to get going, but I do like the last 5 episodes when it's just all the one-liners just spew out and he the world goes to shit again and it just ends on a cliffhanger again. Again, like you guys have all said, even though there's some CGI, it's really good CGI. It's not the kind that just takes you out or just doesn't match up. Mm-hmm. It's used here and there, or it's used like even some of today's action and horror movies where, you know, they have the blood on the floor is real, but then, you know, just the gunshot hitting the skin is, you know, CGI, but it's a decent compromise as opposed to, you know, all the effects stand out or they all hit the mark. You know, it all works regardless of how it's implemented. And again, you know, it gives you enough time to breathe because in between each gory segment, because you just know it's going to keep getting worse, but it doesn't become repetitive. And well, no, I'll take it back. It's the right kind of repetition where it just keeps going on to the next act. And it's like, okay, if you don't laugh at this, you're going to definitely laugh at the next one. And if you don't laugh at that, then you're going to like this one. And if you don't like any of this, then you're totally missing the point of this. But like Daniel and Erica have said, this does expand upon the storyline, and you didn't even expect it to get that deep, but it does. And like John said, just the surprises, and there's some other one-liners, it just stands out, and it just, you know, it would not, a fourth and fifth season would not have been unwelcome. They could have kept going, and they could have gone for 10 seasons, and, you know, they could have given a middle finger to Walking Dead and said, see, who's the number one zombie show now? And the funny thing is, you know, it's not even just a, you know, Ash always had moments with, you know, zombies, but it even expands on all the other haunted spirits, gives life to that. It's like, okay, it's not, there's more than just one Book of Souls. Now there's other just mayhem in the world and other parts of these southern type of towns. And all the other residents have a lot of life to them, just like, you know, the hillbillies in part two and some of the castle dwellers in part three. It just is like, again, the world still feels alive without ever feeling like, you know, everyone's just playing a random stereotype. They're trying to actually give you some kind of sense of someone is here, and there's some kind of sense of reality. There's some deputies who are actually going after Ash because they last got reports of someone cutting a guy in half with a chainsaw, you know? especially at the prom in part three, where everyone's like, whoa, bad costume, bro. And then it's like, again, it's like there's... It, just when Ash thought he was going crazy, he then again has to fight another evil version of himself cloned by the dark powers that be. And that's kind of funny because he's having, again, it's what happens to all these kinds of movies. He's like, no, punch him, not me. In fact, it's actually pretty cool when they're both swinging at each other with chainsaws at the exact same time. It's like, man, how did they film that? So definitely inspired chainsaw fights and more awesome one-liners and just more shit hitting the fan that makes you go, okay, there was always going to be more life to this, you know? And boy, howdy, I saw some people getting disappointed by this because they either were getting bored with season one because it was just gore, or like you guys said, there's people who I know who just flat out hated season three. They just didn't like how it ended. And it's like, well, you know, this is as good as you get. I mean, this, yeah, you'd just be glad they gave this another shot and just were able to give you a free wacky years. And TV, who is basically the resolution. If you can't do a movie, if you can't wrap it all up in 2 hours, you got to just do a 10 episode season. And I really do wish network TV would do that more often. It's just, they want to fill up half the year. And it's like, you know, with streaming and all that and people just saying, screw it, I'll just wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays still because I like physical media. I like watching it at my leisure while I do chores. I mean, I think you got to just do 10 to 13 episodes as opposed to just 25 episodes, which just after a while, there's going to be at least a few episodes that suck or aren't as up to par because just people don't know, or the guest director doesn't do as good a job, or the editor isn't as inspired, you know? Or the producers and writers start and actors start leaving. And so there's a rough transition, you know, in between episodes. So I think, you know, they were so fortunate to get this opportunity. And again, Anchor Bay you know, owned the rights to the film, so they were going to let it play on their network. So it was the right choice. And then they got impatient and then told them to wrap it up. But I mean, even if movie four never comes to fruition, I can handle this as a finale to it. You could easily marathon it along with the movies if you really wanted to, because it's just there's that much love for the character. And again, I, much like Daniel, I would see a lot of people talk about playing the various video games at school. It's like, oh, you never heard of Ash? You never seen Evil Dead trilogy? Oh, what about this game or that game? You know, Fistful of Boomstick. They're awesome. You know, I'm like, okay, cool. I'll check them out. You know, it just, so it is wild how it tapped into, so it's conquered film, TV, and the games, and occasional comics and just other parody videos. What else could it not conquer? I mean, you could do a random Adult Swim cartoon and it would work. I mean, although I prefer live action. But, so thank you all for joining in the dead-eyed insanity. Where can we find you on the interwebs, Daniel? Nightmare Nerd.
As always, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. I've submitted some articles now for Behind the Screams. Unfortunately, House of Tortured Souls doesn't exist anymore. But, keep an eye on my channel, because there's more to come.
I will. And you are welcome to share the videos anytime in the Facebook group.
Thanks.
Erica, what's next?
find me at myhorrificlife.com, on Instagram at myhorrificlife, and often you can hear me on the House That Screams Horror podcast.
For sure. And I hope your Andre Powell can resume your movie.
yeah, I know. I hope so. He is working on filming today with a local actress, so at least the movie's moving forward, though very slowly.
Hey, if you can film a scene per day, and if that's what it takes, do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if he's doing all the lighting and camera work himself. So, I mean,
true.
And he's trying to be kind of the next, a more experimental version of all these Argento types. So that's pretty cool that he's doing his own torture field giallo.
Yes, definitely.
Again, wish him the best of luck. And I still need to check out his movie, but I admire that kind of compatibility and inspiration. So, because that inspires other filmmakers like myself. Just. the only person keeping anything back is based on how you want to lead the brigade. So that's pretty cool.
True.
and John, what can we expect from you next on the Movie Elite or Action Elite review wise?
Well, I might be able to review a new movie that's coming out very soon. So
Okay.
You can follow me on Twitter as ActionFan555, and on Instagram as Jonathan Mark.
Sure. Thank you all for joining in.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me, too.
Anytime.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.